This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca, brought to you by MTS.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon, TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon as we get you set up for the Jets visiting the center of the universe to play the Toronto Maple Leafs later on this evening. A game you can, of course, hear on TSN 1290 Puck Drop at 6 p.m. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Let's get started in talking about the Jets, their Thursday night defeat at the hands of the Washington Capitals. That's probably the worst game they've played since the beginning of the season in your mind, guys?
Yeah, it's quite possible, guys, when you factor in all of those penalties that were taken in the second period, the four tripping penalties, and the score, obviously, 5-1. I think it was the first time this year, actually, that the Jets have lost
by four goals.
So in that sense, you got to think it's up there, even though there was an empty netter. But I think it was such a bad loss, too, because of the fact that the Jets were in that game up until really, you know, the second period there after they went up 3-1, Nicholas Backstrom getting that goal, Richie. But that was a bad loss. And I think, you know, we've talked about this ad nauseum for probably 3 months now about the penalties. I think it really was illustrated when the Pittsburgh Penguins were here and there was that game with over 100 penalty minutes. And we really saw how that affected the game. And we've really been talking about it since then. And, you know, this team needs to stay out of the penalty box. And when you're playing teams like the Washington Capitals, and then they played the Detroit Red Wings last weekend, who have the best power play in the league, they took some penalties. You just can't do this against these teams that can really hurt you on the power play. So, yeah, Drew, it was a tough game. I know people were really overreacting and you know, saying that, you know, this is, you know, the beginning of a slide for the Jets, or maybe getting worried that this was the beginning of a slide. I don't think that's the case at all. I think that, you know, this team is definitely going to be in a dogfight for a playoff spot here for the next month and a half leading into the playoffs. But, I mean, this is a game where things, to me, Richie, got out of hand quickly. I mean, I still think they're in a good position here, you know, playing a bad Toronto team and coming back for four home games after that. So you definitely want to get things back on track. But again, I think, you know, you can't really take one game and extrapolate it and think that this is, you know, the way the Jets are going to play for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it was a bad performance, guys. I mean, it was just an odd arrangement from the beginning. The lines that Paul Maurice decided to throw out there, Buffon at forward, defense, forward, throwing Adam Party at forward. I just thought overall it was out of sorts.
Sort of a recipe for failure?
Yeah, just kind of a lack of clarity, I thought, in terms of what the roster was going to look like. And the same problems that have reared their ugly head numerous times this year. So, I mean, they've had a really successful season, you know, even with all those penalties. But we've said it on the show, and everybody else has said it on this station as well. I mean, you keep taking stupid penalties, and they're going to come back to bite you. And that's what's happened.
Let's look at the wild card standings as they currently are, and we're going to actually spend about two segments a little bit later on in the show going through the remaining schedules for the six teams that are fighting for the final two, for the two wild card spots in the Western Conference. You look at where we are right now, and the Winnipeg Jets still do hold down that first wild card spot. They have 70 points. They're 3 points ahead of the Minnesota Wild, who are currently out of the playoffs. The Wild with those two games in hand, so if they were to win them both, they would leapfrog the Jets and the San Jose Sharks as well. You know, this is sort of the closest the Jets have ever been, really, since, you know, early months now, since they've been, you know, comfortably in this wild card spot. This is the closest they've been to falling out of position. You know, how much of a motivating factor should that be for the Jets going forward? Is this team have to look at the standings and sort of put their foot on the gas pedal going in the next 22 games to end the season?
Well, guys, they got to start getting clean wins here.
Yeah.
Because these 3-point games are going to end up killing them, especially when you talk about a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs, who's completely out of the playoffs. That's got to be 2 points easy right there. And you got Dallas coming up next week. You got St. Louis coming up next week. You got LA. These are all teams that are either in a playoff spot or chasing for a playoff spot. Dallas and LA are obviously chasing, you know, that last wild card spot. You got to get clean wins here upcoming at home after the Toronto game. You can't let give a point to Dallas. You just can't do that because Dallas is chasing you. You gotta hopefully get a couple points against St. Louis. It's going to be tough because the St. Louis Blues are one of the top teams in the NHL right now. But you maybe don't get 2 points against the St. Louis Blues. You got to get 2 points against the LA Kings. The LA Kings right now are the hottest team in the NHL. So absolutely, Drew. I mean, you can't afford to, especially when you have teams that are getting a point, taking it to the shootout. I mean, you know, before the season started, we thought, Richie, that the line for the playoffs might be 92 points. It might be 98 points. I mean, it's possible that you're going to need 100 points to safely know that you're in a playoff spot in the Western Conference. Aside from three teams, Arizona Coyotes, Edmonton Oilers, Colorado Avalanche, I'd say that every other team in the Western Conference has a shot at the playoffs.
Dallas is right on the fringe for me, but I'll respect your opinion on that one. You look at it last year. Last year, the first wild card spot in the Western Conference was at 98 points. The second wild card spot was at 91. To me, I don't think 91 is going to be even close enough this year. I think you're looking at 95, 96.
That's what I just said.
I know, at a bare minimum. I'm agreeing with you, just looking back with the numbers that were last year. You look back previously to 2011-12 and 2010-2011 when it wasn't the same wild card format, but you look at the bottom two teams in the Western Conference, the 7th and 8th spots back then, 96 points and 95 points in 2011-12.
It's a return to that, Drew.
Yeah.
It's this year, we thought that the Western Conference was going to be more set than it has been. So we're talking about the Avalanche, the Stars, the Wild, teams that we all thought were locks. The emergence of the Nashville Predators was not seen by a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And you even throw in the Flames and the Jets into that mix, two teams that weren't in the playoffs last year, that weren't picked by many to make the playoffs. So now you have 11 out of the 14 teams at you know, late in February having a chance to make the playoffs, and you're going to have to win the majority of your games to know that you're safely going to be in a playoff spot.
I mean, I didn't think that this was going to be the case 2.5-3 weeks ago. You look at LA and Minnesota, they've lost a combined 4 games out of their past 20. So that's really why the threshold has gone way up. Be honest, guys. Dallas hasn't played, you know, that particularly well over the past 10. Colorado, I mean, they're out of it. But the idea is, if you look at it that way, I mean, I don't think the threshold was going to be 95 guys before, but now the LA and Minnesota, LA's 8-1-1 their last 10, Minnesota 7-3-0. That's what happened. So they've pushed it up. They've pressured everybody.
Yeah, LA and Minnesota really, Richie, have changed things a lot. And, you know, I personally didn't think that the LA Kings were going to go quietly. I think when you look at the history of Dean Lombardi and Daryl Sutter and this team winning two cups over the last 4 years, you knew that they weren't going to just fade away like the Colorado Avalanche, I think, have pretty much faded away and other teams have. But, you know, these games, Drew, coming up in your own division against Dallas, against St. Louis, and even, you know, interdivision, but in your own conference against the Los Angeles Kings, this is an unbelievably important stretch. And they've had stretches like this that have been important to stay in that playoff race. But now you really have, like, if we're talking about the next 5 games, so tonight against Toronto and then the 4 upcoming home games, you have to get points in 4 of those games, and you have to think, I think, win 3 of those games cleanly.
And, you know, another thing is, you know, I thought with their point threat, with their point gap that they had created between them and the teams in 9 and 10, or, you know, the teams in the second, the third and fourth wild card spot,
generally it had been about 6 to 8 points for the majority of the season.
The regulation overtime win problem wasn't going to be as much of an issue. Obviously, they had a point cushion. Not anymore. And so you look at them now. They're 24. They have 24 regulation and overtime wins out of actually 60 games. It's not very good.
It's the fourth fewest in the entire Western Conference.
Yeah, so but 24, Drew, and that's a tiebreaker, right? Sure. That's your tiebreaker. So basically, anytime they're tied with anybody, they're out.
Yeah.
So now that's even more important to get wins right now, because you look at it, Minnesota, LA, if they end up tied with any of those teams, they lose a tiebreaker. It's a huge factor right now.
Yeah, absolutely. That is it's a good point you bring up there. Is that's why, you know, beating Edmonton in the shootout is nice, but the fact that it went to the shootout is, to some degree, an opportunity lost.
For sure it is, Drew. And another thing is, aside from, okay, look, just I'm going to quickly go over the regulation overtime wins. Aside from LA, it was 26. Minnesota's 28. San Jose, 28. Calgary, 29. Vancouver, 30. You're not catching any of those teams in regulation overtime wins with 22 games left. You're just not going to do it. So
you have to be ahead of them cleanly. You can't be ties aren't good enough in terms of the standings for the Jets because they lose out on the tiebreaker factor.
Now, if you win every game in a shootout, you'll be okay. But the you're not going to, right?
Right, of course. And so that's why it brings back, comes back to tonight in Toronto, which is, I mean,
against an awful team.
The probably, I mean, I would say that they're the worst team. Well, maybe not, but not with the exception of Buffalo right now, I'd say they're the worst team in the NHL.
I think they're worse than Buffalo because they've just, there's so much distraction. Buffalo always knew they'd be bad. I think Buffalo plays pretty hard, has a terrible team, whereas Toronto is a terrible team, and I don't know if they're playing as hard now as they were early in the season. I think they're probably the worst team in the league right now. They have absolutely no identity.
Second half of a back-to-back for the Leafs. So the Jets have been in Toronto since Thursday night or you know, early Friday morning after the game in Washington, and they've been sitting there waiting for the Leafs. The Leafs played last night in Carolina, which isn't the closest road trip that they can play on a back-to-back.
Did you watch that game last night?
No, I would rather put needles in needles into my eye than watch that game.
I really would, you know, not like to admit this, but I watched that game last night, you know, preparing for the show today, watching the Toronto Maple Leafs. Wow. I mean, the Carolina Hurricanes are a bad team, and the Toronto Maple Leafs did not put up much of a fight. And, you know, it was nice to see a guy like Brandon Cozen get his first NHL goal. But, I mean, where is the soul of that team? I mean, Drew, they've lost 17 of their last 19 games since Randy Carlyle took 17 of their last 19 games, and they have not. And I was telling Richie this off air. I realized the game tonight is in Toronto, but last night's game was in Carolina. The Toronto Maple Leafs have not won a road game in 2015. It's almost March.
These numbers you're citing are incredible, because in this day and age in the NHL, it's, you have to try to be that bad to succeed at that horrific level. I mean, and this game tonight at the ACC is a home game technically, but if you don't think that everybody that's a Winnipegger in Toronto has been getting their hands on tickets for this game. I mean, you know, normally when it's a competitive Leafs team, there's a lot of Jets fans in Toronto. Tonight, it's going to be a home game. You're going to hear "Go Jets!" Go. You'll see Leafs jerseys tossed on the ice from Jets fans at the ACC tonight. It's going to be the Jets have to go into Toronto and they have to dominate the Leafs. It can't be a close game. It has to be a.
Why don't they really care if it dominate or not? You have to just get a clean 2 points.
Yeah,
fine.
2-1, 5-0. Just get the 2 points.
Yeah. But I mean, you are playing the beyond a weakened opponent. And you should go in there and take advantage of it.
The thing about them is that they're not a hard team to play against either, right? So we should qualify that. I mean, they have some skill. Don't get me wrong. You make mistakes. Kessel can still score. Those guys can score. But they're not a physical team that are hard to play against.
Especially with Dion Phaneuf out of the lineup. He's coming back soon, but...
And Franzen's traded, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're really not a difficult team. They're not very physical. They're not that tough to play against.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk more about tonight's Leafs-Jets game. We'll talk about the Jets lines from the pregame skate as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hi, this is Drew Mindell. Some surprises are good, like a big comeback win. Some aren't, like internet overage charges. That's why MTS high-speed internet is unlimited, so you won't be caught off guard by surprise overage charges. Switch to MTS high-speed internet from only $20 a month for the first 3 months. Conditions apply. Call or visit your nearest MTS store for details.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
You're back with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
We going after the show?
Possibly. It seems like a good use of our time for after the program.
Yeah.
Work up an appetite, you know, having to deal with you two clowns for the next 2.5 hours.
Yeah, people don't know that you work up an appetite doing radio. I mean, your mouth is moving, you're getting up during the breaks and walking around, and you get hungry.
That's good insight. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Okay. Let's talk about the Jets and the Leafs a little bit more again. 6 p.m. puck drop here on TSN 1290. Nighty, Bayak, and Edmonds with the call for you. We're in agreement that this is as close to a free space as you can get in the NHL nowadays. Do the Jets have to jump on the Leafs early and often to really set the tone? Is this sort of the case that you punch them in the mouth, they're going to be done?
That's always the key, Drew. I think what you want to do is you want to establish a physical style of play without taking penalties. That's the key here, and that's playing with a lot of energy. So sure, that's getting off to a good start, Drew. But that's getting on the Leafs' defense. And, you know, a guy like Morgan Rielly, really good skater. Roman Polak's a little slower. Corbinian Hölzer a little bit slower. Stefan Robida doesn't maybe skate as well as he once did. So what I mean by that is putting the puck in their corner, going at them, creating a good forecheck, and making the Leafs' offensive players defend. That's their top line of Bozak, Kessel, Van Riemsdyk. You know, that's guys like Kadri, guys like Olli Jokinen, you know, and so that's what I mean. It's getting the puck in deep, making guys like that defend, playing a physical style. But that's the key to me in terms of this team, because when you make them work hard defensively, I think a lot of them take the easy way out.
Now, you know, putting the puck in deep and forechecking sounds a lot like what the Winnipeg Jets have wanted to do for most of the games this season.
Yep.
You know, get it out of their own zone quickly with their puck-moving defense, throw it in deep, and go hit somebody, because that seems to be mm-hmm. their mantra since, you mm-hmm. know, early on in October.
Right. Most teams want to do that. Depending on what a team like Detroit, for example, you might see them do less of that because they,
for sure,
you know, they're more of a possession team, a more skilled team. But the Winnipeg Jets have done a good job of this. We've seen them go into, for example, Chicago and do this and really be able to frustrate the Chicago Blackhawks. This is a big team. And I know we talked about this after Evander Kane was traded. It's a less physical team. And Richie, you know, even mentioned, you know, we disagreed a little bit. But, you know, Richie's mostly right, so he'll probably be right on this one. But even Zach Bogosian versus Tyler Myers. Tyler Myers might be bigger than Bogosian, but Bogosian's a physical guy, and he likes to jump in on the rush. Not that Myers doesn't, but the point mm-hmm. being that the Winnipeg Jets, when they're successful, and I think they get away from this, especially when they start taking penalties and get down in games, that they kind of get away from that. This is a team that needs to do that. So you're talking about guys like Adam Lowry getting in there. You're talking about guys like even Michael Frolik, who's a smaller player, getting in on the forecheck. The Toronto Maple Leafs...
How much are they paying him now?
Who's that?
Frolik, because he's been essentially invisible for 2 months.
You're saying his contract demand right. should have dropped accordingly because he hasn't been as successful as he had been earlier in the season.
That's for another show, but I think that's been curbed a little bit.
Richie, a big problem...
Your enthusiasm, if you will?
Not my enthusiasm, but I'm just talking about his
enthusiasm
value.
Enthusiasm in general has been curbed?
Well, no, his value on the market to people, I think, has changed a bit.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Richie, and I think that... When you look at last game versus Washington and the Jets going 3-for-6 on the penalty kill, the Capitals obviously scoring 3 of mm-hmm. 6 on their power play opportunities, if we weren't talking about that, we would be talking about the goaltending and the lack of secondary scoring. And Adam Lowry, for example, has no points in his last 10 games. Mark Scheifele has not had a very good second half to the season. So you're talking about the Jets right now heavily relying on the Ladd Little Wheeler line,
mm-hmm.
and with Matthew Perreault out and Evander Kane gone, I know part of the reason why they got Drew Stafford was to be a part of that secondary scoring. But I mean, this is a storyline for this team. I mean, the Jets can't always get goals from one line. So, you know, I don't mean to single out Mark Scheifele because I think he's had a good year and he does a lot of good things. I'm just saying, I mean, they need some of these guys to step up. Dustin Byfuglien, obviously playing it forward tonight, is going to help because he's been hot as of late and for most of the year. But, I mean, this is a team that when you're talking about going into ACC in Toronto, I think you got to get a good start, Drew, and you got to pound these guys. I mean, you got to have a game where some of these guys start to get in on the line, in on the scoring.
You should probably give the people the lines so far, Drew.
Sure, the lines from what we've heard from pregame skate, Ladd, Little, and Wheeler. Should note, though, that Ladd did not, in fact, take the pregame skate.
That won't be an issue.
Gagliardi was playing up there, but we think that Ladd will still play. It was just a maintenance sort of thing.
You can assume from Gagliardi playing there that he will play, because if he wasn't going to play, it wouldn't be Gagliardi playing there.
That's right. Your second line, they've moved Buff up front, so it's going to be Buff playing the left side alongside Scheifele and Stafford.
Mm-hmm.
Third line, you're going to have Thorburn on the left side with Lowry and Frolik. And then your fourth line is, by the sounds of it, going to be Klingberg on the left side with Jim Slater and Anthony Peluso. Your defensive pairings, Trouba and Stewart the same, Enstrom and Myers, and Party with Sherratt.
If you listen to this show, we'll talk about the lines after Michael Tracos next segment, but if you listen to the show, you know how big of a Jacob Trouba fan I am in terms of his game and what he brings to the table and how talented he is. He has not been the same, though, since Zach Bogosian got traded. And I'm not sure if that is the reason why.
It's his roommate,
or it's just it was his roommate, or it just happened to be a coincidence. But he hasn't been as effective. It's been surprising to me how the past few games, really since that trade, he has been a little bit scattered, mm-hmm. Getting beat.
Had a tough game against Washington, Richie.
Yeah, Detroit too, making some bad reads. And even games before that, it just hasn't been at the high quality of play. So when we talk about lack of secondary scoring, goaltending, I mean, there's a lot of other factors here as well.
Given the way the Jets have been playing as of late, I mean, they're 4-4-2 in their last 10. Given the way they've played, I mean, it's almost a fortunate 4-4-2 because they haven't been very good in the last 10 games, I would suspect. They haven't been the...
Well, of course, yeah, 4-4-2. Coin flip the Edmonton Oilers shootout game and just, right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, coin flip the Detroit shootout game. That's where, right. I mean, impressive that they battled back from being down by a couple goals.
But coin flip the games. They're shootouts. Coin flip.
Yeah. So, I mean, their record is a little flattering, which is hard to believe because it's not very good. Mm-hmm. But their record's been a little flattering over those last number of games in addition to the struggles we've talked about off the start of the show. Let's look at the Leafs forward lines. Expectation is that Joffrey Lupo comes back into the lineup tonight, assuming Daniel Winnick isn't traded between now and 6 p.m. Are we assuming that Lupo plays the right side with Winnick and Kadri?
Yeah, probably, because you usually see Richie, obviously, the Kessel, Van Riemsdyk, Bozak line together, and you got to think that they're not going to put Joffrey Lupo on the fourth line.
They play Lupo on the left side too, don't they?
Sorry?
They put Lupo on the left side too, I thought. Maybe I'm wrong.
They might, but I mean, assuming that he's coming back for the first, this is the first game in a significant number, you'd sort of think, not to ease him into the lineup, because you don't really have to ease him into the lineup because the lineup's terrible and the team's terrible.
Yeah,
but
the team isn't playing for anything. But you look at this roster and you see where Randy Carlyle was able to get some scoring out of them. I mean, Kessel, Van Riemsdyk, Bozak, and Kadri and Lupo. I mean, there is talent there, Drew.
Sure.
And the mix of talent isn't. I mean, the team, the way they play and competing and all that stuff is an issue, but there is some talent. Well, you drop Lupo into there, and there are guys who can score. So if you take stupid penalties, or just regular penalties, that aren't stupid, if there's such a thing. And if you take penalties and you make bad pinches and all that stuff, I mean, it's not like they can't beat you in transition, especially. And that's why, you look at matchups, and you say, that's why I noted the Jacob Trouba thing, Jacob Trouba and Stewart, because to me, if you're matching up, and Bufflin's playing forward today, so Trouba-Stewart, and usually, to my mind, would always be put match up against the other team's top players. Or at least, probably the other team's top players or the second line, one of the two, depending on matchups here. So if you look at it, say if Lupo comes on that line, on that second line, I do have some concerns about, if Trouba plays against Bozak, Kessel, and Trouba and Stewart play against Bozak, Kessel, and Van Rien, you have to be a little bit concerned about Mark Stewart playing up against Phil Kessel on that wing. Because Kessel is so fast in transition, he's got such a good shot, and Stewart doesn't get there quick enough.
That
could be an issue. And then you look at Myers, if you were to say play Myers and Enstrom there, that may be something that you want to look to, but are they adept enough defensively to handle that line? So, I mean, that line is not going like they were before, but they still can be dangerous.
That's why I think it goes back to sort of what I said off the top of the segment. If the Jets jump on them quickly, given everything that's going on in Toronto the playing out the string, everybody seems to either want to be traded or is about to be traded or has to answer questions about being traded on an hourly basis. Get an early couple goals. Yep. Kessel won't play anymore. He'll check out because he's checked out for the last 20 games, really, since Carlisle was fired, at least, or even before then. And these guys will just go through the motions because they won't really have any mm-hmm. vested interest in exerting themselves. So that's why I think a strong start for the Jets is especially important. And then, like we saw what happened here in Winnipeg, have Buff go in there and hit somebody. I forget who he hit. It was a Fanoffi hit last game and broke his shoulder pads.
I remember.
Back when on that Saturday night, when Carlisle got fired as a result, the Jets won 5-1 or whatever it was.
Yeah, it may have been.
I think Buff went in and just plastered Fanoff, if I recall correctly, early in the game, and that was it for the Leafs. They were done. Go in there, hit somebody hard, forecheck, the dickens out of them to start the game, and the Leafs will probably just roll over and be done with it.
That's when the Jets are the most successful. That's the type of team that this is their identity now. It's a hardworking team that's physical. You've got guys at the top of the NHL leaders list in hits. You're talking about Lowry, Ladd, Byfuglien. So I agree with you, Drew. This is the type of game that you're not thinking, you're not going into this game thinking, oh, okay, it's point night for everybody. You're thinking, do whatever you have to do to get the 2 points.
Agreed wholeheartedly. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in our good friend Michael Trakos from the National Post to talk more about tonight's Jets-Leafs game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Twelve 30 in the afternoon here on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the National Post, Michael Trakos. Michael, can you give us the latest update in Winnick Watch 2015? What did he have for lunch?
Hey, boys. Thanks for having me on, as always. Winnick Watch, yeah. Is that a guy that you guys are hoping that the Jets are going to pick up here at the trade deadline?
That seems to be the chatter. I'm not 100% sure why he would be the number one target for the Jets. I think people... you know, might be getting a little bit carried away. The guy's got 6 goals in 57 games, but, you know, whatever. You know, a function, I guess, of being in the center of the universe there a little bit, right?
Yeah, it's funny. Everyone was saying to me, they're like, well, how about David Booth? Do you think the Leafs could get anything for him? I'm like, guys, he has 1 goal. I know that we tend to overvalue the players in Toronto here, but there are other available players at the trade deadline. It just seems like everyone on the Leafs is getting linked to every other team, and it's I think we tend to forget that, you know, like, Carolina's trying to dump players, Arizona's trying to dump players, but no, it's all how much value does Daniel Winnick have? How much value does a Roman Polak or even an Olli Jokinen, who prior to getting traded to Toronto, no one was talking about Olli Jokinen on the trade market, but now that he's a Leaf, how much value does a guy who was a healthy scratch for most of the season have on the market? And it is kind of laughable at times.
Michael, obviously brought you on to talk about tonight's Jets-Leafs game. Leafs playing last night in Carolina, losing, as they have, you know, been known to do on the road since January 1st. But losing last night, given everything you've seen, the second half of a back-to-back, you know, are you expecting the Leafs to, you know, if the Jets come out and sort of punch the Leafs in the mouth pretty early on in this game, do you have any reason to believe the Leafs are going to be able to or want to fight back hard?
No, it's a good point. Like, when the Leafs are getting down these days, and it tends to be pretty typical, they're not a team that has much fight in them in terms of staging a late-game comeback. And a couple things of note, like Joffrey Lupo will be back in the lineup after missing, again, time because of another injury. So they're going to possibly get an offensive boost there. But it's still a team that is, I think, just mentally... just shaken as much as you can be. Like, let's be honest here, like, since the calendar turned over to 2015, the Leafs have 2 wins, and 2 in total, and then 0 on the road. So they're a team that it looks like they're right for the taking, especially for a Winnipeg team that is, I guess, hungry enough to try to make the playoffs here. So it should be, I don't know if an easy 2 points, but if you're betting on this game, for sure Winnipeg has got to be the favorite.
Michael, you mentioned that Joffrey Lupo is going to come back tonight versus the Jets, and you tweeted this a couple hours ago about Brandon Kozin. He scored his first NHL goal. I was actually watching that game, Leafs in Carolina yesterday. But are you surprised that with Lupo coming back, they decided to bring Kozin out after scoring his first NHL goal?
I was very surprised. Just for that fact, and then also a secondary reason is he's a young guy that I thought management would want to kind of take a look at, especially in this kind of meaningless type of hockey games now, to see what they have in him and see if that possibly he'd be a guy that might be penciled in the lineup for next year, whether in a third or fourth line role. So, yeah, coming off a high of a really good game for Kozin, I thought. And if he's a young guy that possibly has some promise, very small, very skilled, ton of speed, can score at the minor league level, and I thought for it would make more sense to pick out a guy like David Clarkson or David Booth, or really any kind of veteran player, and give this young guy a chance. I was extremely surprised that they would take him out. And like I said, especially after scoring his first goal, I thought he definitely deserved another opportunity here.
Mike, you look at this defense, and obviously, you know, Phaneuf out, and then you have the trade of Cody Franz. And I guess first off, in terms of that trade, you mentioned obviously acquiring Jokinen and then getting Brendan Leipzig and a pick. Did you think the Leafs did well on that trade?
I thought so. I honestly thought that they wouldn't be able to get a first-round pick for Cody Franz and on its own. So by packaging him with Santarelli, it made a lot of sense to get possibly a bigger package in return. And I think the first-round pick is key in that regard, because maybe you can use that to possibly move up in the draft, or maybe you can turn a late-round pick into two second-round picks, considering the Leafs are without a second-round pick this year. And everyone that I've talked to about Brendan Leipzig really likes this kid. He's in rookie scoring. He's a top-five guy already this year. Scored his first goal as a Marley yesterday. And he kind of plays in the same mold as a Brendan Gallagher or a Brad Marchand, like a real pest on the ice, but really highly skilled. I think two or three years ago, he led the entire Canadian Hockey League in scoring. So he does have some offense. He's just a little undersized, but doesn't seem like it's really bothering him right now. And then Ole Jokinen was definitely just like a toss-in. They had to make, I guess, contracts work out somehow and balance the books that way. But I thought they did all right. When you look at the guys that are most likely to get moved at the deadline for the Leafs, you're probably not going to get a Kessel or a Phaneuf. So you're looking at possibly late-round picks. And even for a guy like Daniel Winnick, I think if he can get a second-round pick, I think that would be a definite bonus, because we're not talking about guys that are top echelon scorers that the Leafs are moving. Or these guys are just role players. And like I said, we build them up in Toronto, but at the end of the day, they're just kind of guys that are going to be third or fourth line players on another team.
Mike, did Dave Nonis make this trade, or is he making the trade with Shanahan? And, and you know, who made this deal?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's kind of funny, because it seems like any move that Dave Nonis makes that looks like a smart move, Kyle Dubas or Brendan Shanahan get credit for it. And then any move
exactly.
that looks like a head scratch, yeah. they're going, "Oh, Nonis is still in charge," because that was a dumb move. So the guy can't win. And you know, I talk to Dave a lot, and I talk to Kyle as well. And but what they're saying is it's pretty cohesive, and everyone's working in tandem. And you know what? To be optimistic, that is how most of the good franchises do things these days. It's not just one guy calling the shots. You look at the Detroit model, and they've got everyone there. And when Jim Neal was there and Steve Eisenman was there, it's almost like they had three, four general managers all working together to come to a conclusion about a move. And even when Brian Burke was in Toronto, and Dave Nonis got a lot of credit for making the moves, but it was always in tandem with a whole managerial staff that also included Dave Poulin and Claude Lazelle. So the fact that Shanahan is now the president, and you got Kyle Dubas as an assistant GM, and they also brought on Mark Hunter from the London Knights in a managerial role, I don't think that really changes a whole lot of what's happening here. I still believe that the Leafs are making the moves, like I said, in tandem with one another, and it's just kind of unfortunate, because I think Nonis is just getting the short end of the stick every time. Or, like I said, if it's a bad move, he gets the blame, and if it's a good move, well, it must be the new kid calling the shots.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Michael Trakos of the National Post, discussing the Leafs ahead of tonight's Leafs-Jets game in Toronto. Michael, ever since Randy Carlyle was fired and Peter Horacek's come in as the interim coach, and it seems fairly clear he is just the interim coach for this season, you know, that hasn't stopped him from really trying to change the way the Leafs have played and sort of put his own stamp on the team. You know, are you surprised at how sort of activist he has been as an interim head coach?
Yeah, you know what, he didn't come in saying, you know what, I'm just going to kind of run things the way they've always run and just be kind of a different sounding board or voice. He's tried to change how the Leafs exit the zone, how they play defense as a team. Almost every facet of the game, he's kind of put his stamp on. And it is kind of strange to see, considering that this isn't a guy that's kind of just trying to get a head start for next season, because by all accounts, he's not going to be back. Even before he coached his first game on an interim level, no one was saying, okay, well, if Horacek wins X number of games and gets the team in the playoffs, there's a chance to be back. No, it was always on an interim level. So I am a bit shocked, and maybe it's just the fact that Management really wanted to see what these players could do under a more structured system, because I think a lot of the blame in terms of development and how individual players were performing were kind of blamed on Carlisle, and there was a notion that while Carlisle's not playing a very structured system, and because of that, certain players aren't playing as well as they could be. So let's try to get a more structured system in here and see if that changes. So maybe that was part of the reasoning behind it, and it wasn't just Voracek saying on his own, well, I'm going to change A and B and C. It was more management kind of working with them, saying, listen, we want to get a different look as to can Phil Kessel play a more 200-foot game if he's supplied the proper system. So that could very well be it, and I think the conclusion is none of these players seem to be willing to play the kind of style that you see out of Winnipeg. You see a lot of the good Western Conference teams, which is a big, heavy cycle game that is very aggressive and very defensively sound. And the system seems to be working, but within that system, these players, it doesn't seem like they're capable of doing it.
Michael, you wrote a really good piece for the National Post 2 days ago. You know, the headline being that rebuilding really has to do with what's in the cupboard, and the Toronto Maple Leafs not having much in the cupboard. You know, you mentioned in the article William Nylander, obviously, you know, there is a highly touted prospect for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they did acquire Brandon Leipzig, and they've got some other prospects in the system. But because they don't have too many grade A prospects, does that really mean that, does that really show the importance, I guess, of the upcoming 2015 draft? They're going to have a high first rounder, and then they're also going to have the first rounder from Nashville. But does that mean that really they're going to have to nail their picks and also try to get as many picks as they can here before the trade deadline?
I think definitely. And I think that was almost a bit of a surprise when I was talking to scouts, and because I'd always heard that Toronto had a lot of prospects, and it very well is true. They do have a lot of guys that are probably going to eventually get to the NHL level. But when at the end of the day, aside from William Nylander and like a Morgan Rielly, who's already played in the second year, they don't have any guys that are going to be like impact players. Most of the players they have, because they're drafting in the third, fourth, and subsequent round, these guys are just going to be role players. And it's totally a function of the Leafs trading away. I think it might be 12 picks in the first and second round they've traded away in the last 9 years, which is just a staggering number when you consider that impact players are typically found at the top of the draft, so in the first and second round. So this year's draft, I wrote a piece a couple weeks ago how this is a year where it's good to be bad, and this is if you're going to be rebuilding with the Leafs, this is the perfect time to do it, because you're going to obviously Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel headline the draft, but there is just an abundance of talent in the top 5, top 10, and even later in the draft. So the Leafs really got a hit on it. And starting last season when Shanahan took over, there was a real philosophical change in terms of how they were evaluating prospects in the draft. And before, when Brian Burke was here, it was more North American heavy, and big, strong type players were favored over smaller skilled players. Well, that totally changed last year. They took William Nylander, who's about 5'10", and is arguably the most skilled player in the draft. And even with their third round pick, they took a Russian defenseman, another guy who's got a lot of top end skill. And it just kind of followed suit where they're leaning more on European players. And from what I'm hearing from the scouting staff and how they're valuing players going into this year's draft, it seems like that's going to be the same philosophy. They're not going to be taking those big power forwards, or more going to be relying on guys who, regardless of their size, they have some sort of skill set that can lead to possibly being a top six forward or a top pairing defenseman.
Michael, final question. Paul Maurice addressed the media yesterday in Toronto and said something which was a shock to all of us. He said that, you know, it's tough to play in Toronto, and the media and the city make it difficult to play in Toronto and all the pressure. Do you think that was much ado about nothing in terms of the comments, or do you think that the media and city sometimes get blamed too much for the lack of performance of the hockey team on the ice?
You know, I honestly think it's a chicken and egg thing. I think Toronto can be an okay place to play, obviously, if you're winning, but in terms of how bad the city is, in terms of for losing teams. I don't think there's a worse place to play in the NHL when the team is unsuccessful, and that's just because of the numbers in the media and just the attention that you get here. So the good times are obviously could be possibly the best times in any NHL city, but the flip side is when things go wrong, oh boy, you're going to hear from it, and it's just almost never-ending.
Morgan Riley found that out yesterday, didn't he?
Yeah, God. Innocuous comment in any other city just gets blown out of proportion, I think.
Yeah, well, no argument from us on that end. Michael, appreciate the time as always. Thank you, good friend.
All right, guys. Thanks for very much having me on, and enjoy the rest of the year. You guys have a good team to watch there.
Thanks, Michael. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That was Michael Tracos from the National Post.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Big thank you to Michael Tracos of the National Post for joining us to talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs. In case you missed any of that, along with any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. This segment of the program is brought to you by our good friends at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, let's talk about the forward lines and I guess the defensive lines for the Winnipeg Jets ahead of their game tonight in Toronto. Again, I will rehash them for you. This is from the game day skate that happened about, let's say, 90 minutes ago, give or take, in Toronto. Ladd, Little, Wheeler, no surprise, those three are together. Dustin Byfuglien moves back from defense to playing forward, this time the left wing, which I'm not sure if he's ever played left wing as a forward.
Who's that?
Byfuglien.
Yeah, a couple times. They have Byfuglien and Thorburn playing left wing, and they're both right wingers.
Right.
If they're going to play forward, if Byfuglien's going to play forward.
Richie, the only position that Byfuglien hasn't played is goal.
Yeah, goal and center, and that's amazing, but it also speaks to the complete lack of depth up front because the Jets continue to play guys on the wrong side all the time.
So, Byfuglien, Scheifele, and Stafford, Thorburn, Lowry, and Frolik, Klingberg, Slater, and Peluso. Defense, Enstrom and Myers, Trouba and Stewart, Sherratt and Party, goaltender Michael Hutchinson tonight. Let's start with the forward lines as currently constructed. Are you surprised that Adam Party doesn't get a second game at left wing?
Well, I just have to be honest. I don't understand why he played at wing. I don't understand that decision at all. You have Byfuglien, and he certainly could have been a guy who could help you up front. That's one thing for sure. You have Klingberg, and that's one thing I want to touch on for a second. I touched on it quickly with Matt Leibel on the warm-up yesterday when he was filling for Hussler.
You're cheating on us?
I was, yes. I was cheating,
boy.
Yeah. This is the thing. You have St. John's Ice Caps. We know, they haven't really had much in the way of offense this year. Klingberg leading the team in goals, I believe, but, obviously not tearing it up by any means.
I believe he had 15 goals before he was called up to Winnipeg.
So the point for me is, if you have guys busting their butt down on the farm all season, and you haven't called anybody up, yet you've rolled out a fourth line of Gagliardi, who's been on waivers twice, Slater, and Peluso. Don't get me started on Anthony Peluso being in the lineup any more than two times all year, but for another day. So you have all these guys on the fourth line, and you don't trust the fourth line. Paul Maurice does not trust the fourth line. I don't blame him. Doesn't trust the fourth line and hardly ever plays, and if he does, he tries to protect them. Okay? So you have the injuries, and you need a fourth line left winger. So Klingberg, big guy, plays left wing. Plays the wing. He plays left wing, as far as I'm aware. And you have the spot available for him. And if you're not going to play Byfuglien up front and shuffle some guys around, don't you kind of owe it to the guys on the farm to show that you have trust in what's happening there to at least play one of their top guys on the fourth line wing spot for a game instead of Adam Party, who is frankly not a top six NHL defenseman? So how he gets in at forward is beyond me. I just don't understand that decision. Now, is that decision to cost them the game? No. The fourth line left winger is not going to cost them the game. But I just like, is there like a lack of trust between the AHL and the NHL? It's like, I don't know. I'm not trying to create rumors here at all, but that's just an odd decision.
No, and Rich, I think
it doesn't make any sense. Unless Klingberg wasn't able to play, we don't have any indication that he wasn't able to play. He was there.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense to me. And you're putting Adam Party at wing?
It's a
I mean, what are you talking about?
It's a valid observation, and I don't think anyone expected Adam Pardy to play the left wing at all this year.
Adam Pardy didn't expect to play it.
Right.
And, never played it before.
And, you know, I've said this all year, and I know that, you know, we could sit here and you could say that some players, you know, aren't ready for the NHL or there aren't enough scores in the AHL to call up. But it is peculiar that aside from one game for Patrice Cormier, one game, there have only been two forwards called up all year, Klingberg and Cormier, and Klingberg hasn't played in the NHL yet this year. So, again, I'm not saying that Carl Klingberg's going to go in there and score a hat trick, but he's been one of the best players for the Ice Caps.
You don't need 7D either. I mean, you don't need that. You have a bunch of guys who play already playing like less than they ought to. So.
Right, right. No, no, you're right, Richie. And I think, you know, this comes down to, like you said, Rich, a lack of depth and the need for Kevin Cheveldayoff to acquire somebody. I mean, the Jets are in danger right now. I'm not saying they are going to miss the playoffs. I don't want to get people, you know, ticked off at me here because I still think the Jets are going to make the playoffs. They might have a tough schedule here coming up, but I still think they can do it. But I'm just saying that with a tough schedule coming up, I think they need to go out and they need to get some scoring help because, you know, these guys are struggling to score goals. And again, I think the next few games are going to have a big impact. And that's Captain Obvious speaking there. Because we have 9 days to go before the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. But if guys like Mark Scheifele and Adam Lowry and Michael Frolik and Drew Stafford, if these guys don't start putting the puck in the net, I think Chevy's going to say, okay, you know what? I got to go out. I have to give up a second-round pick here and get whoever I can.
Doesn't he have to go out and make a deal anyways?
Of course he does.
I'm just saying, I think there's more urgency.
I think there's
now.
2 points to what happened on Thursday in Washington. Number one, I agree with you, Richard, that you call up Klingberg and then the decision to not start him.
I can understand not starting him if you're playing Buffalo in a forward.
Right. If Buffalo's going to be a forward and you need and that's where you're getting your extra forward from, I completely understand that too. But everybody in the effect of not giving Klingberg that opportunity, I think, is felt in the Winnipeg Jets dressing room and I think in the St. John's Ice Caps dressing room as well. So there are some additional ramifications beyond just that one Washington game as a result. That's fine. Point number two. I know that, I mean, it's fairly apparent, everybody knows that they need to go out and acquire another forward.
Mm-hmm.
I think that every game that passes where they don't acquire that forward, it says to the players in the dressing room, management doesn't really believe in this group that we can do anything beyond maybe just squeak into the playoffs.
See, I don't know about that, Drew. I look at it from the perspective of they're probably,
I don't agree with that.
They're probably waiting. If they don't acquire one past the deadline, then yeah, that I would agree with that. If they don't acquire one before the deadline, I would agree with that.
Well, but if they didn't acquire when Scheifele went down right before the deadline.
Yes,
passed,
I agree with that. I mean, but that's probably that was the right decision.
I agree, it was the right decision as well. But this year you've been in the playoffs for the entirety of the year.
Yes, but if they don't acquire any forwards going through the trade deadline, then yes, I agree with that. That says we don't have faith in your squad. And I think that would be a wrong read, likely, especially if Perreault possibly gets back for the playoffs. I think that would be a wrong read.
You've got two first round picks. I mean, you can dangle one of those.
Doesn't even matter.
Richie.
A bunch of this is the thing. You need somebody who's better than Anthony Peluso or Chris Thorburn or Adam Pardy. You don't need Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah,
it's not hard to get that. Take a fifth round pick and put it on the market. You will get something better than that.
Look, they did it for Jay Harrison. We've seen that they can do it. You just go out and you get
it's not rocket science. I mean, get a forward that has a little bit of, you know, trade a third round pick. Let's not overvalue these picks here.
With respect to Anthony Peluso, it's hard to trade for a player in the NHL who's not better than him by default.
Yes.
I mean, who's a bona fide NHLer with respect, because, you know, Anthony Peluso is an NHLer, and I certainly am not. But it's not that difficult to find a guy on any of the other 29 rosters that could probably play more minutes than Anthony Peluso's.
Better hope Anthony Peluso's not listening, Drew.
Well, I bruise like a peach, so just if he looked at me angrily, I'd probably be
no,
be
but
a
Drew, let's call it how it is. You're playing guys in the roster who've been on waivers a couple of times, and what I mean by that is no other teams want them or need value them as an NHL roster player. Anthony Peluso, to me, doesn't. You know, if you want to have him as a 13th guy and drop him in against a big tough team like Los Angeles or somebody like that, then okay, I can totally see that. But if he's getting your regular shift as your fourth line, and Coach Maurice doesn't trust the fourth line, then there's an issue there. It doesn't all fall on him. But I just think that, and then you're playing Adam Pardy on the fourth line. You clearly have no confidence in the value of St. John's. Maybe you ought not have that. But if you ought not have that, then you should bring in somebody else who there is confidence in, and it doesn't cost much to add that player. You know, it probably should have been done in the offseason, frankly, but it wasn't. Mm-hmm. So it ought to be addressed now.
And I think what's getting lost here, Richie, is that I think you need to bring in a top six forward top nine forward. Whatever you want to say. You need someone to play either on the second or third line, because right now they have guys that are interchangeable on the second or third lines, such as Frolik. What's getting lost is you don't want Dustin Byfuglien playing forward. And I think people seem to does anybody even remember what Dustin Byfuglien started the season at?
Forward.
Yeah, so I mean, like,
that was that a rhetorical question?
Well, no, I mean, he's seesawed back and forth so much that you forget sometimes, but I think you want Buff playing on defense. That's where he's the most effective. I'm not saying that he's not effective as a forward, but I think, Richie, you don't want to ideally have this situation. I think the reason why Adam Partey played on the left side of the fourth line is because they decided they wanted Byfuglien on defense. And then they said, well, I don't know if we want to put Klingberg in now. I mean, you need to go out and acquire someone, and I don't think you want to wait till the last minute, because I think then you might have to give up a little bit more. I'd be shocked if Chevy doesn't bring in a forward.
Yeah, but if you're going to play Byfuglien on defense with this roster, then you're going to have two holes in the left side.
Mm-hmm. You got Chris Thorburn as your second line left winger right now.
Well, your third line left winger right now, but Byfuglien's your second line guy today. So, right. Yeah, so then, yeah, that would be probably what would happen. Or you're going to play Frolik on the left side, and he's more effective on the right side. I mean, there's a roster issue there. That can be addressed. Yeah. It can be addressed, but it needs to be addressed.
Before we go to break, some forward lines from the Toronto Maple Leafs, courtesy of Jonas Siegel, TSN 1050. Van Riemsdyk, Bozak, and Kessel as normal. Winnick, Kadri, and Panik going to stay together. Komarov, Jokinen, and Clarkson. Joffrey Leupel apparently is going to re-enter the lineup as the fourth line right winger, along with Peter Holland in the center and David Booth on the left wing. So we'll see how long that lasts with Joffrey Leupel, being eased into the lineup, as it were. We'll see how long that stays that way for the Leafs. Jonathan Bernier getting the start for the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. Let's head to break. When we come back, Hacks with Hags. Joe Haggerty is going to join us to talk about the struggles of the Boston Bruins. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
You keep doing NHL news. It's all Winnipeg Jets news, NHL news.
There is NHL news in that we do reference the upcoming opponents to the Winnipeg Jets, so you can definitely say there's NHL news.
Dave Manuk of .com is not going to like that read.
I don't give a damn what Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com likes or doesn't like.
You know, while we're waiting for Joe Haggerty here,
yeah,
maybe we should talk about Remus's upcoming DJ gig tonight.
Yeah, Remus is busy calling Joe right now, so we'll make sure we can make fun of him when he has a chance to defend himself. Might as well say that this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, we Ian Bagg in town for the final night. He's been selling out the show all week long, so be sure to get your tickets. RumorsComedyClub.com. Trying to get a hold of Joe Haggerty, having a couple struggles in doing so we'll get Remus to keep working on that, of course. The Jets obviously in action tonight in Toronto. The Bruins really struggling as of late. Six straight losses. Ezzy and I had written them off about, 6 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And I didn't write them off. I still thought they would make the playoffs. I said that their window for being a Stanley Cup contender was closing.
Okay, fine. I think you wrote them off, but that's a separate issue altogether.
I listened to it, and if you want to go back, I still think they're going to make the playoffs, and back then I still said they were going to make the playoffs.
Okay.
The argument was, is the Bruins' window closing for them being a Stanley Cup contender? And I think it is. I think when Zdeno Chara is in his final couple of years in the NHL, and you have some other players that aren't as effective as they were before, Milan Lucic being one of them. I'm not saying that he isn't a good hockey player still, Richie. I just don't think mm-hmm. he's as effective as he used
That's
to be.
Fair.
But, I mean, you still, up the middle, have Patrice Bergeron, David Krejci, David Pasternak's a first-round pick that looks
player.
Really promising. Carl Soderberg. I mean, they have a lot of good players, Drew. I still think they'll get in here. But, you know, watching them last night against the St. Louis Blues, Malcolm Subban made his NHL debut. He was pulled, and then they put him back in. This team isn't as good defensively as they once were. And that was always a staple. Mm-hmm. You go into Boston, and this is a hard team to play against, and they just aren't anymore.
They aren't as hard. Yeah, they've been struggling lately. As in, have some injuries now too, and they're trying to play Subban. I think truly trying to get a market for one of their assets, which is the goaltending.
Let me interrupt you for a second. Yeah. There was a lot of talk there that they were going to showcase Malcolm Subban on Wednesday against the Edmonton Oilers, and they lost obviously to Calgary. I believe that was Monday night. They lost to Calgary, even though they were up 3-0 or whatever it was. And then they went into Edmonton, and the thought was they're going to showcase him in a quote unquote an easy game against the Oilers. They ended up choosing Tuukka Rask. They end up losing that game to Edmonton in a shootout, if I recall correctly. And then they decide to play. I know they're playing. They're not playing back to back. They're playing. They played last night in St. Louis. They're playing Sunday afternoon in Chicago. And then they decided to start Subban in St. Louis rather than on Wednesday in Edmonton when everyone suspected. So a little bit of curious decision making going on there, I think, in the Bruins, you know, with Claude Julien and maybe in the front office about.
Well, I just think it's funny that Claude Julien and Pierre Chiarelli's job are apparently on the line. I saw that on TSN this week that their jobs are on the line. Like, what do you have to do in the National Hockey League to not have your job on the line now?
You know, go to two finals every year, win
the cup. I mean, sure, you're going to get on him for the Sagan trade. You're going to not like the fact that he got Sagan for Kessel. Like, you know, obviously, I know it wasn't straight up. It was for a draft pick that resulted in Sagan. But at the end of the day, I mean, stop saying these guys' jobs are on the line because they struggle for a year or because because there's a transition time. You can't win every. It's just amazing to me. I don't understand it. Why don't we break down the schedule here, Drew?
Okay, we can't get a hold of Joe Haggerty, so we'll start with we'll try and get him on later on in the show. We'll talk.
The Bruins are yesterday's news now.
They are yesterday's news. So let's talk about the upcoming schedule for the Winnipeg Jets and the five other teams that are battling for the final Western Conference wild card spots. Now, the beauty, of course, for the teams in the Pacific Division is that three of them are going. You know, Anaheim's already pretty much clinched a playoff spot. Two of those other teams are going to get in. Two of Vancouver, Calgary, San Jose, and the Kings are automatically going to make the playoffs just by virtue of finishing top three in their division. Let's look at the Jets' schedule. They have 22 games remaining, including tonight in Toronto. Everything is effective of this morning. 22 games remaining. Of those 22, 12 are at home, 10 are on the road. 14 are against playoff teams. 8 are against non-playoff teams. You know, of the 22, if you want to get to 95 points, which we, let's say 96 points because that's an even number, that's a grand total of 26 points from now.
Yeah, so they have to get 13 wins in
22 games.
So 13 and 9.
13 and 9. If you give them the wins against all of the, you know, let's say they win all the games against the teams that are clearly out of the playoff race. That includes games against, I'm going to include Dallas there. So Dallas, Colorado, and Edmonton, that's 3. Florida, Ottawa, and Toronto, that's another 3. That's 6 wins right there. So you got to get another 7 at this point in time. You got Minnesota and the Kings once each. You got San Jose at home for 1. You have Calgary at home for 1, and you have Vancouver for 2 at home and on the road. You have Nashville in Nashville for 1. You have the 4 against the St. Louis Blues.
That's tough.
You got 1 against Chicago. That's at home. And then if you look at the top teams in the East, you have 1 at home against Montreal, 1 on the road against Tampa, 1 at home against the Rangers, and 1 at home against Washington. Do you see in those games 26 points for the Winnipeg Jets?
Yeah, I do. And I think that it's not an easy schedule, guys. You know, you mentioned the St. Louis Blues coming up 4 times. To me, that's really going to make or break the season, really, if you think about it. And let's say that you have 2 wins there out of those 4 games, is something I would probably pencil in there. I think it would be pretty tough for them to win 4 or even 3 games against the St. Louis Blues, just because the St. Louis Blues are one of the top teams. And I realize Brian Elliott has had some problems lately, and Jake Allen had to go in for him. But, you know, to me, you know, you got to take it one step at a time here first, Richie. And, you know, you got the Toronto Maple Leafs here tonight, and then you've got a very tough homestand coming up. You've got the Dallas Stars first, and then you got St. Louis. So you got to win. To me, it's about winning those games within your own division. And sure, you know, you mentioned Calgary, I believe, is the last game of the year, and you've got the Canucks a couple times. That's going to be important here. But, you know, it's when you look at some of the other schedules, it's very similar. I mean, there's some harder schedules. San Jose is probably a little bit harder.
San
Jose's got an easier schedule. Vancouver's got a harder schedule. Pardon me, Minnesota's got a harder schedule.
We'll go over the schedule. That's what I meant. Why don't we do this? Why don't we go through? You said that you can find 13 wins, okay? because you are 13-9. So why don't we go and you'll pick the 13 games you think the overall wins.
Right, and I mean, you're really, it's tough to just pick that.
Well, I mean, you think they're going to win in Nashville, at Nashville? I mean, you'd lean towards, they're not going to be the
favorite. Well, Rich, I got to be honest, I didn't break it down picking every single game, but I think that
I would find 13 game as a loss. Like, I don't think they're going to go into Nashville and win in Nashville.
I think most people would probably say, would agree with you there.
I'm going as like, who's going to be the state?
Right. But at the beginning of the year, if you went through the 82-game schedule, would you have picked Winnipeg to beat Chicago three times in Chicago?
No, and of course, that's why they play the games.
Right.
Right? But I'm saying, like, if I'm going through the lineup, I'm saying...
It's a lot of guesswork.
I'll give them two wins against St. Louis and two losses against St. Louis. I'll say they'll split St. Louis.
I think that's probably optimistic to some degree.
I think they lose to Chicago. I don't think they're beating Chicago. I think Chicago's getting going a little bit more in terms of the playoffs at that point in time. That's March 27th, I think they play Chicago. So that right there is... I think Vancouver, I'd say they probably split Vancouver, so they win and lose, and I think they beat Calgary. So right there you have 4-5 through 9 games. I'm just going based on the spreadsheet, Drew, that you've created here. I think they beat San Jose at home because I don't think San Jose is particularly good. So I think you're 5-5 there. So you need to find another 8 games that you win. Now, Ezzy, I'll ask you. I mean, in my opinion, you have Minnesota, L.A., Dallas, Colorado, and Edmonton. I would say, like, I don't think the way L.A. is playing right now, I don't think they beat L.A., but I think they probably beat the other 4 teams. Dallas, Colorado, Edmonton, Minnesota. I don't think that's too hard. So if you do that, then you have 9 wins already. And if you have 9 wins, then basically, of your games against Montreal, Tampa, Rangers, and Washington, what would you guys think? I mean, all those teams you could argue are better than the Jets.
That Minnesota game is Monday, April the 6th, and it's in Minnesota.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that certainly would be based on the way the Wild are playing, that certainly is almost like a playoff game in and of itself.
But if they play Montreal, Tampa, Rangers, and Washington.
Yeah. 3 of those 4 at home.
Okay. If you even split those two, split those 4, and you get 2 wins and 2 losses, so far as we're talking about, you'd be 11-8, and then all you need to do is beat Florida, Ottawa, and Toronto, 2 of 3 to make the playoffs. So I would agree with Ezzy there. Based on that, the schedule should be favorable enough that they should be. Now, it's not an easy schedule by any means, but if you go on that basis, you should at least be able to win 2 of 3 against Florida, Ottawa, and Toronto. Florida being the toughest game of those 3, and then you should be able to get into the playoffs. Now, again, easy for us to say, but you got to obviously take care of Minnesota and other teams, but it's not the hardest schedule in the world.
The toughest stretch is between March 7th and March 14th. There's no back-to-backs. Those are 4 road games against the Predators, Blues, Panthers, and Lightning. So the Panthers are clearly the weakest team, but when you're talking about the Predators, the Blues, and the Lightning, you're talking about teams that are all in the top 4 of the respective conferences. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's the toughest schedule. You got the Stars, Blues, Kings, and Senators coming up here at home. But again, no back-to-backs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tough schedule, but I think you can be above 500 in this next little stretch of 9 games here, especially tonight. You got to assume is going to be a clean 2 points.
Jets have 2 back-to-backs left, Monday, March 23rd and 24th, where they're in Edmonton and then in Vancouver.
And they've been pretty fortunate, I believe, back-to-back games this year. They're on the lower end.
For the fewest in the NHL, if I recall correctly. And then they have a back-to-back in St. Louis, in Minnesota on the 6th of April, which is a Monday, and then St. Louis on the Tuesday. And those aren't the most difficult, in terms travel-wise, those aren't the most difficult back-to-backs there. I would say the Edmonton-Vancouver one is a little bit harder, but you're going further west, so it's a little bit easier on the body in that you're gaining some hours. But you look at this schedule, and I think you mentioned the Predators, Blues, Panthers, Lightning road trip as being hard. I think the 4 home games: Canadiens, Blackhawks, Rangers, Canucks.
Yeah, that's not easy.
That's not easy too, especially the Canadiens, Blackhawks, Rangers.
I think we're being fair there, though, with 13 wins. I think they can get to. Now, again, we're assuming the 96 will be able to get you in.
Well, I mean,
I think it will be. I mean, next segment, Drew, will go over all the other teams' schedules.
That's right.
Because I think that's obviously important to see context, right, Ez?
Yep.
But overall, I mean, again, you got to be able to take care of business against Calgary based on our assumptions there, and San Jose and Minnesota. So those are not easy, I mean, by any means. And splitting against Rangers, Montreal, Washington, there's one other team I'm forgetting there. And Tampa Bay. I mean, that's not easy either.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you said 3 of those 4 are at home. It's not going to be an easy run. But I think it highlights the importance of easy fastball, 80-mile-an-hour fastball in the middle of games like tonight.
Sure.
It does. Because if you lose a game like tonight, Then you got to beat one of those other teams, and you got to take three or four from St. Louis, in theory, based on what we're talking about here.
You're right, yeah.
And that puts a lot of pressure on you.
Drew, one back-to-back for the Jets for the rest of the season. That's March 23rd and 24th against the Oilers and Canucks.
Two back-to-back. They have one in April as well. But you're absolutely
right. So two, but I mean, that's not a lot.
No, you're right. It's not a lot. You're absolutely right that you have to start with tonight in Toronto, which is one of your, you know, quote unquote free spaces on the calendar, because they don't play you hard. And so you go in, you take care of business in Toronto, and all of a sudden, if it's an easy game and you're able to cycle your fourth line and give them maybe upwards of 10 minutes, which has been hard to do pretty much all year.
See, that's the thing. Drew, you're getting down to 22 games left in the season.
You're saying ride your horses?
They've been riding their horses all year. I don't think that's going to change. Start rolling out the fourth line.
I don't think it will either.
It might hurt them if they miss the play. If they make the playoffs,
sure.
Like, I think it's going to hurt them because I think some of their horses are going to play a little bit too much.
Oh, I don't think they're going to all of a sudden start playing the fourth line significant minutes either, unless the game is so out of hand that they're able to. Which, if that happens tonight and it's an easy game, all of a sudden, you know, you play Thursday in Washington, you have an easy game Saturday in Toronto, you're not back on the ice again until Tuesday, against Dallas, and you're a little rested.
You're playing a Dallas team without Tyler Seguin.
Yeah.
Huge bonus. And then you obviously have St. Louis on Thursday, which will be a tough game, and then Sunday against the Kings. And that's leading into the trade deadline on Monday.
Right.
So, I mean, there's decisions that need to be made. There's four games left here. Till the trade deadline. And I don't think, I mean, unless an injury occurs, I don't think that your mindset there changes, but there needs to be a move. I think we did talk about that last segment. And certainly that will make it, you know, I see your point, Drew, in terms of wanting, I think you mentioned this early in the first hour, about wanting to get something done and letting down the guys in the room. And our point is that you have to see what they do after the trade deadline. But certainly it'd help if they were to acquire somebody, say, this weekend to help them with those three games coming up this week.
Sure.
But that's usually not how these GMs work, all of them, really. They wait till Monday.
They go deadline hunting.
Yeah.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll look at the other teams in the Western Conference that are vying for the final wildcard spots. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
20 minutes past 1 in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg. Still to come on the show, next segment, we're going to hear from Evander Kane. He had a press conference earlier today in Buffalo.
Who?
Evander Kane. He had some interesting comments about, of course, his time here in Winnipeg and, you know, what transpired or did or didn't transpire in Vancouver that led to him being traded to Buffalo. So we'll bring that audio to you coming up in about 10 or 15 minutes. And then at the top of the next hour, from the NBC Sports Network and NBC Sports, Anson Carter, a studio analyst, is going to join us. Pleased to bring him on, as he interviewed him earlier in the day today.
The Ezzy one-on-one. I'm looking forward to that.
You guys, you and Anson are buddies now, Ez?
Yeah, it was a really good interview.
I met Anson Carter when I was in high school going to a Leafs-Bruins game. I went on to get his autograph and Ray Bourque and a bunch of other guys. And Anson Carter was probably the nicest guy of the bunch.
Well,
I will
say.
Yeah, he was a really nice guy.
There you go. So anyways, Anson Carter from NBC Sports.
And he was holding out, our friend Neil will like this because that's who I was with. And when we looked at the picture, we got a picture with him too. And I have it somewhere. And Anson Carter's holding his, I guess he's like drinking a Coke or something. And he's holding it really like under the can in a really odd way. You know, when we thought, like, why is he holding the can? Like, not
like, why isn't he gripping it?
Yeah,
why is he
holding
it
underneath? And anyhow, it came 2 or 3 days later. He was reported he had a broken wrist and he was out for the year. Yeah.
So, but just for the record, you didn't break Anson Carter's wrist. Okay, good to know. Let's get back into the schedule analysis. I want to start with the Minnesota Wild.
Well, Ray Bourque was very hard to get an autograph from. Because a bunch of the guys outside of the arena were like the autograph guys.
Yeah.
You know, the guys who want to get
the guy
books.
Who want to sell it, though.
Right? I don't really care about that. But, I mean, I was just some kid who wanted to get Ray Bourque's autograph. And it was very difficult, I'll tell you. Like,
he wasn't the
I
warmest
almost slammed
guy?
Into a garbage can. I did slam into a garbage can because I was trying to get it. I didn't see that. Yeah, it was very odd.
Why did he
Anson Carter was very nice, though.
Why did he slam?
Because he was hesitant to give an autograph, and I was walking beside him and didn't see the garbage can. Out of a TV show. Well, Drew, you know, if he had just signed the autograph, I wouldn't have hurt myself.
Yeah, but the image of you falling into garbage cans.
I got the autograph anyways, but...
Well, sure, he body checked you into a pile of garbage. I would hope the least he would do is give you an autograph.
That was I have some other funny story, though. I don't know if I'll share them on air, but about that getting some autographs in Toronto that time.
Okay. Let's look at the rest of the schedule analysis for some of the other teams chasing those final wild card spots. I want to start with the Minnesota Wild, because we know that the Minnesota Wild have two games in hand on the Winnipeg Jets and are only 3 points behind the Jets right now. The Jets with 70 points in 60 games. The Wild with 67 points in 58 games. They're playing great hockey, 8-1-1 in the last 10. They've been absolutely on fire for much of the last, well, month, 6 weeks almost. They have a difficult schedule. You look at the Wild schedule. They have, of their 24 remaining games, 15 of them are against playoff teams, more than the Jets have. And those 15 games mm-hmm. against playoff teams aren't against the teams that are sort of on the fringes. You know, they're not against the teams that are sort of, you know, just in the playoffs. They have three games against the Nashville Predators. They have three games against the St. Louis Blues. Mm-hmm. They have a game against the Blackhawks and a game against the Ducks. So those are all the sort of the upper echelon Western Conference teams. Then you look at the Eastern Conference teams they have games against.
Yeah, I know.
They got a game against Detroit, a game against the Islanders, a game against the Rangers, and two games against the Washington Capitals. I mean, that is a difficult schedule if you're a fan of the Minnesota Wild.
And no, not only is that schedule hard, guys, the Minnesota Wild, you have to think, can't sustain the amount of wins that they have yeah. and the way Devan Dubnyk is playing. And to me, and I know we want to go team by team, Richie, and the Minnesota Wild have a tough schedule. I was mentioning to you, Richie, off air, the Calgary Flames play seven of their next games on the road because of the Labatt Breyer being at the Saddle Dome. And you know, that's not going to be easy for the Calgary Flames, who blew a third period lead against the Anaheim Ducks yesterday. So, I mean, for me, it's the Kings that have the best chance of getting into a playoff spot. And, you know, sure, you could dissect the schedule, and it's not going to be easy either, but it's going to be tough for a lot of these teams.
Well, because, yeah, I mean, you know, the Wild, as you mentioned, keeping up that pace with the difficult schedule they have. You look at LA's schedule, you know, they have they have 16 games against playoff teams and 9 games against non-playoff teams. The first key for me there is they have 25 games.
Sure.
Right? So they have 3 games in hand on the Jets. You look at their schedule. I mean, see, they play once against Nashville. They don't play St. Louis at all. They play once against Chicago, twice against Anaheim. But they play Vancouver 3 times, San Jose twice. I mean, like, those are the fringe teams, Drew, that you're saying. Like, they're not playing against those top echelon teams that
That's
much.
Right.
You look at the East, they play, you know, Detroit, Islanders, Rangers, and Habs once, and they play Pittsburgh once as well. But overall, you know, when you're playing against Edmonton 3 times,
sure,
that should be 6 easy points. Arizona once, Colorado twice. That's 6 games there that you should cruise through,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you have some other teams, you know, so that LA looks like it's hard to not make the playoffs right now for the Kings. With 25 games left, 6 against such easy teams like that.
Yeah.
And because they really are at the level of any other team. Like, you don't have the same perception of, you know, Minnesota playing St. Louis, you're thinking, oh, St. Louis against Minnesota. LA against anybody, it's LA is equal.
That's right.
Not better.
And especially when, like we said, like they're games against playoff teams. They have the most of Winnipeg, Vancouver, Calgary, San Jose, Minnesota, and the Kings.
Yeah.
They have the most games against playoff teams, but their games against the playoff
yes.
teams are probably the easiest of the playoff teams that they could possibly match up against. You know, 2 against San Jose, including tonight the Stadium Series in Santa Clara.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Yeah, I know that's in rapid fire, but quickly.
Okay.
Okay, quickly.
Quickly.
That's game's kind of important, right?
So why are they bastardizing it by playing it on the ice in nice weather outside?
I understand the significance for the state and all that stuff. We'll talk about that more later, but I'm just saying it's an important game.
Yeah.
That's not played in the usual circumstances.
I agree. And it is an important game because both those teams, I mean, I think if the Kings were to win that game tonight, they would leapfrog San Jose, if I'm not mistaken. They would tie San Jose to be... So it's a very important game for playoff matchups,
yep.
and
anyhow.
You're right, they're playing it outside where they really shouldn't. Okay, let's continue on the schedule. Look at Vancouver's schedule. They have 24 games remaining, 11 against playoff teams, 13 against non-playoff teams. They have 1 against Nashville, 2 against St. Louis, 1 each against Chicago and Anaheim, 2 against the Jets, 2 against the Sharks. Then you look, they got 3 against the Kings. So those
That's
3
tough.
Games, I think, between
That's
the
tough.
Kings and the Canucks can almost be the determinant over which of those two teams is going to make the playoffs.
I don't know, Drew. I mean, it may be. I mean, they also play the Arizona Coyotes 3 times.
Right. So they have if the Kings have 6 soft games, 3 against the Oilers, 1 against the Coyotes, 2 against the Avs, so do the Canucks. three against the Coyotes, one against the Stars, one against the Avs, one against the Oilers. So, you know, those six easy games for each of them is sort of a wash.
Yeah.
But then again, Vancouver also has Buffalo, they have Toronto, they have Columbus, and they have Philadelphia.
Those are easy games.
Those are easy games.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't really
Maybe not Columbus and Philly as easy as the other two, obviously, but they're easier.
They're easier games.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know if those teams, Columbus and Philly, are going to peddle some players here.
That's right. I mean, I'll have some of these teams then, you know,
also,
9 days from today on the trade deadline.
You assume the teams that are bad will be worse.
Because they've traded anybody that's got, you know, any sort of marketability and that there's not going to be there long term. You look at the Sharks now. The Sharks have 11 games against the playoff teams and 11 games against non-playoff teams. Again, their schedule is not that difficult in terms of their Western Conference opponents. One against Nashville, one against Chicago. That's it.
They go 11 across the board. It's funny as you have this broken down, Drew. They have 22 games, 11 versus playoff teams, 11 versus non-playoff teams, 11 at home, 11 on the road.
That's right. The hard part of the San Jose schedule is that they have two against Montreal, two against Detroit, and two against Pittsburgh. Where, you know, those are difficult teams against good teams in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, that's fair.
Their easy games are two against Arizona, one against Edmonton, one against Colorado, one against Dallas. So that's five, let's say, call them easy games. And then they play Toronto.
I wouldn't say Dallas is an easy game.
Yeah, I wouldn't say
Dallas
is an easy
game. The other guys are easy games.
Right.
Easier games.
One against Toronto, two against Ottawa, one against Philly. Not the most difficult schedule. I think it's going to come down to them. What happens when they play those Eastern Conference teams?
Yep.
Because that seems to be where, you know, they sort of are unique among all the Western Conference playoff teams in that their games are against, their hardest games are against Eastern Conference teams.
It's a long way to go for them into the East, but also a long way to go for those Eastern teams in the West. Like, it's not easy to play in those. Usually they swing through, I don't know if they are these teams, but swinging through LA, Anaheim, San Jose.
That's right. They could often be playing 3 and 4 nights or whatever it is. And then finally, Calgary. Calgary's got
and
the easy.
Sorry to interrupt you, but considering LA is playing against San Jose, playing against Montreal, Detroit, and Pittsburgh, once each, you can then assume that they're probably doing it all on the same trip, right?
Right. The Calgary Flames have the easiest of the schedules when looking at playoff teams versus non-playoff teams. They play 9 playoff teams in their remaining 23 games, pardon me.
But as you mentioned earlier, they play 9 home games only because of the Brier.
Right, because they're on the road for the next week for the Brier. Now, the Flames, you know, but you look at those games they're playing. Yeah, the next 2 weeks by the time they get the ice ready and then the Brier itself actually starts. You look at Calgary, they got, you know, a game against Edmonton, a game against Arizona, two against Colorado. So, you know, 4 easy games there, you know, if we're saying Dallas isn't an easy game. Mm-hmm. And then you look, they got a game against Toronto, a game against New Jersey, a game against Columbus.
They have a lot of easy games against bad Eastern Conference teams.
That's right.
They have 5 easy games, 6 easy games against Toronto, New Jersey, Columbus, Ottawa, Philly. So, I mean, that should be where you make your hay there if you're the Calgary Flames.
You know, it's going to be an interesting stretch drive.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it should be fun, and you're right in the middle of it here in Winnipeg. So it makes it a real blast as far as I'm concerned.
That's right. In past years when the Jets have been, you know, in the playoff race, they've been really on the fringes where you sort of got to squint to see a way for them to get in.
They control where they're going to end up here.
Sure. You take care of your own business, and you win the games that we mentioned in the segment previous where you win 13 of those 22.
Should be okay.
You should be okay. And if you're not okay with 96 points in the playoffs, so be it, almost. You've done what you can, I think, for the most part. You know, as a Jets fan, if they get 96 points and they don't make it, well, it's crazy.
Remember, though, we should note before we go to break here, 96 points, Drew, if these teams get 96 points, remember the tiebreaker issue.
Absolutely. They got to win. They got to get more than the team below them because of the tiebreaker. Yeah. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll play some audio from Evander Kane's press conference earlier today in Buffalo.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.